In this 2-year anniversary podcast, we decided to visit again with Dr. Michael Sleesman, our very first podcast guest. Because, after all, he talks about current technology and how faith communities might observe and use them. And every year there's something new in developing technologies, right? And new questions about them. Dr. Sleesman is the managing director and research scholar for the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. He's an affiliate professor of bioethics for Trinity Graduate School outside of Chicago and has served as an adjunct instructor and online course tutor at the college and graduate level in the areas of philosophy, theology, ethics, and cultural engagement. And his areas of research specialization include the theological engagement of bioethical issues with particular emphasis on biotechnology, other emerging technologies, and human futures, as well as the intersection of technology, ethics, and culture in general. Michael has co-edited and contributed several essays to the volume Everyday Theology, How to Read Cultural Texts and Interpret Trends, edited by Kevin J. Van Hooser, Charles A. Anderson, and Michael Sleesman. Bottom line, yeah, he's smart. So here's my second anniversary conversation with Dr. Michael Sleesman. So it's happy anniversary time for us here at Bring to Mind, 2 years as a podcast, also our 100th episode. And so, Dr. Michael Sleesman, we had to talk with you again. You were our first podcast back in 2012, and every year we've touched base with you at this anniversary time, and really, you are great to talk with because the things that you're interested are all like future, so there's no chance of them dying out as a point of interest for sure. Because things like technology and really thinking through ethically and just intellectually modern technology and culture is just something that through the ages, people of faith need to be connected to, don't they?
Yes, I just am so grateful to be on the program again, and just congratulations to the continued success of this program and your 100th episode. That's a huge milestone.
So, yeah, a lot of interesting people out there.
Yes, wonderful to be back on.
Yeah. So I was saying that, you know, your topics of interest, you know, are always evergreen, and I know that you really are a believer in Christians connecting faith to current technological and cultural topics.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that we're in an exciting time in human history, and that affords us a lot of privileges medically, scientifically, technologically. But I think it brings a great deal of responsibility, particularly for Christians, to think about the ways that we live in the world and engage in the context that we live in. And some of that means thinking through some of these technologies a bit more, and to do so intentionally.
Well, we want to talk about some of the new technology in a few minutes. But, you know, I want to ask you first, you're a futurist primarily in my mind, but do you ever look back at history and you can pinpoint those times where people of faith were connecting to history and being influencers in positive ways versus those moments where really we were the judgers and the critiquers, but not offering much substance for, you know, helping ourselves through those topics of the
yeah.
day?
Well, we need to know our history. The history of ideas is profoundly important, not just because of the maxim that those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it, but also because there is a richness, particularly as a Christian. We have this rich heritage of those who have gone before us faithfully, interpreting Scripture and contextualizing what it meant to live as a Christian in their present age. And so we can look for a great deal of wisdom, find a great deal of wisdom there. And also, I think there's a tendency in our contemporary world to think that the issues that we're dealing with are completely new, and in some ways the technological issues that we're dealing with certainly are new.
Yeah.
But oftentimes there are deep rooted things that are at the core of what it means to be human that we've been struggling with for hundreds of years, if not millennia.
Yeah, what does it mean to be human? And at this point in history, what are some of our finer moments? I think it's so easy to look back and really look at history and say those were not our finest moments as the Christian community. I think for one thing, we're a divided collective. Well, that's kind of, can't be divided and be a collective, I guess. But we're a divided group, and that there are many denominations of Christians, and we're not always on the same page. But for the most part, where have we really shown in history?
I think there's been a variety of places, and unfortunately, as you mentioned, there's a long legacy of places in which the church has been divided and has not always led in the way that is Christ-honoring. But I think in the commitment to human life at all lifespan points, in the early church, the opposition to abortion, I think of the care for the sick. Mm-hmm. And how that was so central to the early Christian church and the early formation of Western medicine. And, you know, really even the formation of hospitals themselves coming from, this Christian notion of hospitality and this devotion to the care for those who are on the margins of society, those who are vulnerable, those who are sick. Mm-hmm. Have we always been exemplars in terms of the manifestation of that throughout the continuity of the church? Absolutely not. But I think there are these ideals that we see evidenced at various points where the church was truly living into what it means to be a city on the hill.
Well, let's come to present day then. And so I know that you are a student of culture, and I've mentioned technology and ethics as well, as we relate to one another in ways of integrity. Let's talk about some of the manifestations of, you know, new technology over the last year. Stuff that a year ago, maybe we had an inkling it was on the horizon. Maybe it was something we didn't know anything about. Something that comes to mind for me right away is drones. It's like, man, we're hearing a lot more about drones, especially I'm thinking back to September of 2014, the protests in Hong Kong, you know, where there was a real suppression of internet services in mainland China. But, you know, this new social network kind of came to photos of that drones were taking as they moved through the crowds.
Yeah, drones is one of those news items that certainly has been rather captivating in terms of its emergence. I think in one of our earlier conversations, we talked about things like 3D printing and other kinds of disruptive technologies.
Right.
And I think drones are another one of these interesting watershed moments. Are they completely new technologies in a sense? No. Okay, we've had stuff like this around for a while, but it's the move to making these viable from a consumer standpoint. And also the combination of that with high-resolution digital imagery and stuff. You know, everybody's smartphone has just unbelievably precise cameras on them, right? And so the introduction of that, and so, as you mentioned, surveillance and monitoring technologies, but really just interesting proliferation of this technology into a wide spectrum of applications.
Yeah.
Law enforcement and military. Consumer, we see, you know, Amazon and maybe even Google wanting to get into doing, you know, product delivery via
drones. That is so weird.
Yes. Raising all sorts of interesting questions, you know, what
really
happens if a drone goes awry and, you know, crashes into something, who's responsible? Yeah. So, you know, humorous kinds of implications, but also very serious implications from the standpoint of privacy, safety. And I think even pushing on the privacy issue, just this continuing realization that with the with really the emergence of the communication technology culture in which we live, social media, all of the information technologies we have, you know, Skype and Google Hangout and smartphones, and being ever plugged in, is this increasingly small area of what privacy may constitute.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that also as we consider things like drones. And so, you know, you have real estate industry wanting to use them for the purposes of trying to get better images of properties that they want to advertise. But then you also read the stories about, you know, individuals inappropriately peering into neighbors' houses and things like that.
Yeah. That's what kind of creeps me out about the retail delivery drone system. You know, fine, drop it at my door, but don't edge toward one of my windows, you know. Honestly, you know, more and more of this is sounding like it's out of a movie. It's sounding like, to me, sometimes like stuff we've seen in movies, only it's becoming reality. It kind of makes you wonder if the filmmakers are way ahead of us in predictive postures.
Well, I, as I've mentioned previously, I am voracious in terms of just a lot of reading fiction and also watching films. I think that these are great cultural indicators, not necessarily always depicting how culture perceives what's going on, but I think that these are an interesting barometer in terms of measuring just how are we thinking about this? How, you know, what are the pressures we're feeling? And so, you know, the dislit genre has been really popular over the past year or two, this dystopian literature in the young adult scene, The Hunger Games, Divergent, Partials, Maze Runner, right? So, you know, so I think that these raise all sorts of interesting challenges in terms of the ways that we see technology and culture shifting and society as a whole, and how, you know, how do we struggle with what are the dilemmas that kind of arise from these? I'm a huge supporter of fiction, particularly the fiction I'm interested in, science fiction, some of the dystopian literature. So, you know, revisiting classics like C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, reread that this past year, and thinking through like That Hideous Strength, where Lewis is really anticipating a lot of the sort of technological will to power that we're seeing in contemporary society. Moves towards transhumanism, posthumanism.
Don't you think often, too, the idea is how can we get inside of somebody else? How can we get inside their mind or their body? Or how can we even control their mind and body? It seems like it's this real move toward intimacy and getting closer. How can we get in there with one another? You know, get into each other.
Well, and we see this with, you know, again, going back to the social media stuff, but also technologically, you know, I think of some of the films that came out in the past year, this the movie Her, right?
So, oh, yes,
you know, this artificial intelligence operating system, and you have this idea of, you know, a computer system that would know us so thoroughly, you know, so really as a personal assistant, but then also, you know, in odd ways becoming a partner and companion and these other things. And so, yeah, I think there's some interesting questions that we're struggling with them. Again, what, you know, classic questions, what it means to be human, what is the nature of identity, how do we understand technological artifacts like computers and smartphones? Are they extensions of us? How much should they be speaking into our lives? You know, I think of Siri and the iPhone, but then also as you look at Google and Microsoft, and as they've introduced their own artificial intelligence, you know, personal assistant systems, and, you know, Google making the comment even just a few weeks ago that, you know, the more information you give us, the smarter that we will make you.
It's this idea of getting into another, getting into the soul of another. And in the case of the movie Her, here's an alert if you haven't seen it. I mean, that took that to new places, even surrounding sexuality, you know, in the film. So this idea of connection, I think, is interesting, but at the same time, to me, it's frightening. It's kind of scary.
Well, as Sherry Turkle has noted in Alone Together, we're in this odd situation where we're ever more connected and never more alone, right? So we're in a world in which we're always plugged in. We have instant access to, you know, pretty much any information that you would want, but also pretty much anyone else around the globe. And yet we're also finding that people are experiencing loneliness in intriguing ways that you wouldn't anticipate with the proliferation of communication technologies. So, you know, we have wonderful ways to stay connected. And yet, I think getting back to some of the things we've talked about in past years, the importance of embodied presence and face-to-face interaction and real community. And you know, again, these are things that when we look at the technological options that are in front of us, as a Christian, we begin reflecting upon what does it mean to have friendship? What does it mean to be in relationships with people, with a spouse, with a friend, with a family member? Mm-hmm. And what ways does technologically mediated relationship differ from embodied presence?
And I've had to realize over the last year, Dr. Sleesman, that my phone had actually become a friend to me. Like, I was feeling like an emotional connection to my favorite places I go to and had to touch base with it. And, you know, if nothing else was going on at the moment, I could turn to this friend. And I really, you know, I had to examine that. Something just, you know, it's kind of like back to that movie Her, you know, when this guy falls in love with an operating system. I think that we are challenged, you know, in our souls to see how intimately connected we are with technology.
Well, one thing we realize very quickly is that embodied presence is not efficient, right? Mm. So relationships are messy, and that's one of the things that's intriguing with that movie in particular is that the relationship doesn't turn out the way that the main figure in the movie thinks it does, and yeah. Not to, you know, spoil the ending if somebody hasn't seen it. So, but you know, we think about relationships and how these digital technologies, what they offer us. And, you know, it's easy to reduce the idea of communication and relationships and knowledge to, you know, so communication as the analog to relationship or information as the analog to knowledge. And so one of the things that we begin to realize, hopefully, if we're critical about these things, is that technology offers us an analog of a certain kind of experience, right? It doesn't offer us the same experience. It offers us an analog to it, something that you could suggest it approximates the real experience, but it isn't the real thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, so when you have something like Siri or Cortana or these other artificial intelligence, and I'm using that term very loosely, personal assistance systems, okay, they approximate person,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't persons, in at least not in the sense that we think about them. They're
but
not
maybe our based. Maybe our thinking about who persons are
yes.
is changing, because frankly, it's easier to pick up my phone before bed at night than it is even to read anymore or to call someone, or, you know, it takes effort. And I think part of this is just, you know, how busy we are as well. How worn out and fatigued we are, and it's easier just to connect with something I can hold in my hand, and actually I can control the relationship.
Yes. Well, and that's, I think you're explaining something that is so common to our experience. You know, we see the efficiency gains. I think of when I first got a BlackBerry and how that began to change my experience of the day. And, you know, at the time they used to refer to those as crackberries, you know, and this idea of addiction to these devices. Mm. And it was sort of an interesting experience seeing how going from, you know, just the way that we always are in our busyness and move towards efficiency, towards now having a device that allowed me to actually fill any open moment with work.
Mm-hmm.
That had a certain sense of tyranny to it, mm-hmm. and that there was this technological push in every moment of my day. So if I'm sitting in the doctor's office, I'm not just sitting quietly waiting and learning patience. What am I doing? I'm sending emails. I'm reading mm-hmm. emails. I'm checking the news.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm checking Twitter. Now I'm on Facebook, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think this is again, where we've talked in the past about needing to establish the value of a life of the mind, and especially a Christian life of the mind, and becoming wise cultural agents, and not just going through life, you know, sleepwalking. Mm-hmm. And actually, I've been reading this book by Oliver O'Donovan, Self, World, and Time, and he uses this image of really needing to be awakened. And I think this is really an area that the church has to be challenged in, that culturally, I think we're asleep a lot of the time.
Hmm.
Not in the sense that we're oblivious, but we're not really paying attention mm-hmm. to the ways in which these technological artifacts, these cultural things that we experience, like movies and the things we see in the news, how they're shaping us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what he's really calling us to is this idea of being vigilant. And it's interesting, he unpacks through a number of places in Scripture the call to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
And and I think about that from the standpoint of being engaged Christians in, you know, the areas that I live and move in terms of bioethics, you know, science and medicine and technology. And, you know, we all go to the doctor's office. We all use, you know, digital devices of some sort. Do we ever actually think about what we're doing? Do we realize we're making moral decisions when we use them?
Hmm.
And
what's an example of that? Like, when might we be making a moral decision that we're just not even cognizant of?
Yeah, when we're in the doctor's office and, you know, you have your basic cold, and it's only been a day or two, you know, you got a sore throat or whatever, and we're pushing the doctor to give us antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we don't actually need the antibiotics. In fact, maybe the antibiotics actually won't help us at all. But it's sort of that medical or pharmaceutical self-help,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's our security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's a moral question as well, because in the case of, you know, over-prescribed
mm.
antibiotics has led to a variety of negative outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so those, that's a simple thing. But even when you go into the doctor's office, you've long ago signed a consent form that allows for them to do a variety of things with biological samples that they take from you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of us, we, like any other kind of consent form that we sign them without actually looking at what it says.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times do we open the product, you know, for new software or a digital device, our smartphone, and we've consented to a bunch of things that
yeah.
we're not really actually sure what we've consented for.
Mm-hmm. But do those examples concern you? I mean, those just sound like daily life to me, not moral decisions.
They are daily life, but they do have implications to them. And so this is, I think it's this call to being awakened. And,
I guess I'm numbed out already. I just go along.
That's right.
Well, I mean, honestly, when I go to the Genius Bar at the Apple Store, I'm beginning to realize that when they're, you know, monkeying around with my smartphone, there is so much control over my life in that glistening white store.
Yes.
I mean, and I was telling someone the other day, man, we worry about, you know, one world government and all this. I think it might come through our smartphones. And the person said to me, hey, watch out for Amazon. They're another one. You know, where there's just this, like you're saying, you know, we're kind of numbed out while these technologies are just encroaching on us and kind of swallowing us up. We're all drinking the Kool-Aid.
And please don't hear me. I am not by any stretch of the imagination a Luddite when it comes to technology. If our budget could handle it personally, we would be early adopters to many different things in
yeah.
terms of what's out there technologically. But I do think that technology is a good, it's a litmus test of sorts
mm.
in terms of how aware are we of the sorts of things we're consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe fiction and film is another one of these. Maybe the workplace is another one of
mm-hmm.
these. You know, we could talk about social justice and a variety of considerations in terms of being aware of justice issues in the world. And, you know, whether that's from eating chocolate or buying certain brands of clothing or shoes, you know, and knowing how child labor and forced labor may feed into those. I think there's a variety of ways in which, because we are so distanced from where things come from and how things are made, whether it's something like chocolate or clothing, or it's something technologically and we really mm-hmm. don't understand how it works,
that
like you said, we're numb to it. We're skimming along the surface of these things. And that's where I think this moral ethical dimension, really a theological interpretation of what's going on, really being aware, and actually O'Donovan, I want to come back, he challenges us through these threefold lens of self, world, and time, and saying that we actually need to awaken to each of these in terms of our response. So, you know, the Socratic maxim of know thyself, so self, you know, but also pushing us to world and time, and that acting ethically, acting morally in means understanding the world around us and the time in which we live. Mm-hmm. And I would push this back in terms of the ways that we've talked about life of the mind previously and the Christian life of the mind and the importance for us as Christians to know our scriptures, to be theologically informed in terms of seeing the world theologically, but also to be good interpreters of the times in which we live. And I think that means being aware of some of the news, but I think that also means understanding some of the technologies. There's been a big push the last few years for STEM literacy, science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And over the last just few years, probably the last 2 or 3 years, you've really seen a push for what's been referred to as code literacy, mm-hmm. and this idea of program or be programmed. And so maybe that means that some of us actually need to learn a little bit more about how this digital technology actually works.
Yeah. You know, to me, I'm just like, I don't have time for that. You know, just there are other important things to get to. And I think, you know, I see that happening in my own life, Michael, that I have come to depend on technologies to such a large extent that I've just put my trust in them and also gone to denial. And I'm just hoping for the best. And, you know, I'm just in line with everybody else, you know, just like serve it up and I'll eat it. So I appreciate how you call us to develop that, keep developing that life of the mind and to really think through, you know, what's going on. But as we think about technology, what influence do we even have? I mean, who's going to give up their smartphone these days? How do we become influencers?
Well, I think first, again, being informed is really important. Even if it's just at an introductory level, we don't all need to be experts. Certainly, I'm not asking anyone else to become a bioethicist. There's plenty of us.
Thank you.
Yes. and we don't all need to be formal academic theologians, although I think we should spend a little bit more time on theology in the church. But I see, though, more of the other problem. Not that too many people are becoming experts, but rather that people are relatively unconcerned about the world in which they live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from the standpoint of thinking through of wondering at the creation that God has made, mm-hmm. and being wise in the way that we utilize the things that are the creation of human hands, mm-hmm. and whether that's, you know, food and resources in terms of, you know, electricity and other things, or if it's things like technology, that's where we need to become more intentional about mm-hmm. not just being blind consumers, but actually as Christians becoming wise cultural agents. And if anybody in the audience is familiar with some of the work that I did with Kevin Van Hooser and Charles Anderson and Everyday Theology,
yeah.
Really trying to call people to think about the world theologically, mm-hmm. One of the chapters, we looked at the grocery store checkout experience, yeah. and this realization that when we go through something that is common to every single one of us, we go through the checkout line experience at the grocery store, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not a universal experience, but it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we challenged in that particular chapter is this idea that when you go through the checkout line, you are being bombarded with competing images of the good life.
Yeah.
And we as Christians, we have a lot to say about what the good life actually is, particularly because Scripture speaks quite a bit about it.
Well, you know what I'm thinking as you're talking too, Michael, is the idea of the discipline of Sabbath. And if we even take a day to reconnect to God's world so that we know that world as well and connect to our faith communities on the weekend and connect to ourselves and, you know, there's that kind of God-given practice where we can unplug and we can spend some time plugging into God's world. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think here, this becomes a discipline of sorts. It can become an issue of technological tyranny, really, in that this constant need to always feel plugged in. And again, please do not hear me as suggesting that the technology is evil. I do think that the technology has certain powerful dispositions that push us in certain kinds of directions. But I've written in a few places and I'm working on some other research that I think it's really naive to think of technology as either good or bad in terms of the classic good or evil sort of thing. But maybe there are technologies that we might agree upon that would just be evil. But I think more than that, they're complicated because they have values built into them. This is part of engineering design. They're value-laden technologies. So they value things like power and maybe, like in terms of the internet, things like democracy, the ability, you know, to open up access and those sorts of things. So they have certain kinds of dispositions that push us towards something, maybe not determine us, but are really influencing us in some pretty strong ways. But because we're, you know, asleep most of the time in terms of the way we use these, we don't really realize it until we mm-hmm. step away. And, you know, if you've spent much time, if your phone's been broken or you've lost it or something, you actually, you know, if you forget your phone at home and go to work for a whole day, you kind of feel a little bit vulnerable without it.
I was going to say naked.
Yes. and why is that? And again, I think this is part of that idea of technological tyranny. You know, there's a sense in which, while they don't control us, they certainly do have quite a bit of a force over the way we experience our lives. And for many of us, maybe we need to spend some intentional time stepping away. Maybe it's not a long period of time, but we need to build in that space. The other is just for purely human reasons. To be plugged in all of the time takes away from some of the physical experience we actually need. We know the value of being out in the sun. Mm-hmm. With appropriate limits in terms of vitamin D and other things, right? We know the importance of exercise and, you know, the concerns that have been raised over the past few years with professions that sit all of the time. And so, you know, you've seen the rise of standing and walking desks and these things, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I was thinking of the author Skye Gittani, who was quoting some research that talks about how technology is actually keeping, you know, 20-something guys and girls from connecting toward marriage. Mm. It's changing brains and habits and desires, you know, such as gaming and so forth, and keeping us from relationships and normal social behaviors that used to seem normal, a part of life. So, yeah, lots to consider, not only to talk about technology, but to see our connection to it. Again, easy to critique it, but what's it look like, you know, for me in my life? So as we head into, you know, the next year now, we were talking about, you know, completing 2 years of the Bring to Mind podcast. So any predictions as we look into another year of podcasting, you know, a year from now, you know, what do you think we'll be talking about when it comes to technology or ethics, bioethics?
technology, science, these things are, you know, we're notoriously bad at projecting them. Sometimes we underestimate where we're going to be, and then other times we're way off in terms of overestimating. And you know, by now, if you were present in the 1960s and the space race to the moon and everything, you would have thought that by now we would be, you know, doing interplanetary space travel and everything. But I think some really intriguing things that we're seeing pop up in the news, autonomous vehicles really making some really interesting mm-hmm. strides. I think it was last week or the week before, Audi announcing that they had this vehicle that was driving itself at near the limitations of its higher-end speed capabilities, so like 140 miles per hour around a racetrack kind mm-hmm, of thing. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see in a year autonomous vehicles on everyday street? No. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some really interesting developments that are there. I continue to watch what's going on with the various aspects of the BRAIN initiative that mm-hmm. President Obama initiated last year, and this increasing interest in neuroscience and neurological ways in which to interpret a variety of things from areas that we might see natural connections to in terms of clearly medical, mm-hmm. but then also psychological aspects, things that we have considered from the standpoint of ethics and morality. There's this growing interest in whether things like virtue could mm-hmm. actually be enhanced or created in human beings. So I think there's some really interesting ways in which we are discovering more of how the human brain actually does work. And then also raising some challenging questions and then some things that I think that maybe we will need to confront from a standpoint of what should or we should not be doing in some of these areas. Mm. I think some continued improvements in terms of just really exciting developments in the area of 3D printing. And I think we talked about that maybe in our first episode and really seeing that field come of age in terms of some of the medical technologies that it's been used for, from things like actually printing jawbones and skulls and, you know, things that
yeah.
maybe turn our stomach, but are actually quite medically useful, to this story just a few weeks ago of a 2-week baby in New York, where the surgeons printed a 3D replica of the heart and were able to use that as a test to perform a very complicated procedure on, mm-hmm. and then were able to successfully do that in the baby because they had done it with an exact replica of the baby's heart already.
Oh, that's amazing. My son brought home a bolt, like nuts and bolts, that was created from a 3D printer.
Okay.
And just like, man, I feel old or something. you know, it's just amazing to me that the Gutenberg, you know, the whole printing press and all the rest was a big deal centuries ago. It's this kind of world where you're like, who would have believed? But
yes.
It's happening fast.
So I think some just really interesting and exciting opportunities, but also things that, you know, we need to keep our eye on from the standpoint of just moral considerations. So, yeah, I think, you know, I continue to be optimistic, but I also think that we as Christians need to be vigilant to keep our eyes on things that are going on and to continue raising questions. You know, what does it mean to be human in a digitally and scientifically and technologically advanced era? And do the things that we consume, do these contribute to our own well-being and our common good? Not just our individual well-being, but also societally and globally.
That's Dr. Michael Sleesman, our first BTM podcast guest, who's helping us to celebrate our second anniversary and 100th episode. Oh, and all that stuff I was spewing about Apple and Amazon, that all came from that conspiracy theory part of my brain. What can I say? Thankfully, for now, it's just a small corner, right? Thanks to Mark Bretta today, our Bring to Mind engineer and producer. And here's to another year, Mark.
Hey, I'll be tweeting this week at Melinda Schmidt, and I'd love to hear your feedback at Melinda Schmidt, M-E-L-I-N-D-A-S-C-H-M-I-D-T.